Hazard Audio.
This week, Sergio Santo Domingo stands in for Steve Gross while the hosts go over the NFL Draft, the NBA Playoffs, and Major League Baseball. It's all right here.
Recorded live at the Launchpad Studios in Chicago, Sports Appeal.
This is gonna be a home run! I just know it! Because I can see into the future!
With your hosts, Steve Gross and Matt Axelrod. Play ball.
Welcome to Sports Appeal. I'm Sergio Santo Domingo, filling in for Steve.
And I'm Matt Axelrod.
Thanks for checking us out this week. Make sure to check us out on podbean.com, iTunes.com to subscribe, and make sure you leave us a review as well. Check us out on Twitter at The Sports Appeal. We're produced by Johnny Five.
And we're powered by Hazard Audio.
This week, we've been talking about the NFL draft, of course, NBA playoffs. We got some baseball to talk about, our sports madness. You know, the Kentucky Derby's today, so we got a lot going on this week.
Yes, we do. Absolutely. It's a great weekend for sports. First, let's get into the NFL draft.
Absolutely. In Chicago. First time in, what, 50 years? Over 50 years?
Yep. So they always do in New York. Finally brought it to Chicago. So, what are your thoughts initially about the draft so far, Sergio?
There was so much hype. And one thing the NFL does so well is there's no NFL going on, but we're always talking about it. I mean, literally, the Super Bowl was just a couple months ago. They do a great job of promoting themselves. But for all the promotion, all the hype, and all the talk about what's going to happen, it was anticlimactic. I mean, it's exactly what I thought was going to happen. Jameis goes first. Mariota goes second. No real big trades. You know, San Diego traded up, but nothing crazy. I think they've said it's the least amount of trades. The first trade was like pick 15, I think. And I think it's the first time that something like that's ever happened. It went as it's supposed to go. It's a draft. It's not a game. They're just picking players. It was anticlimactic.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm not really excited about a lot of the players either.
Yeah.
I mean, I do think that the Bucs and the Titans had to go with Winston and then
absolutely.
Mariota. That was the right order, and those are the right moves for those guys. I don't think either of them are going to be good pros. I mean, I think that they'll both end up being okay, but neither of them is really going to blow the doors off. But, I mean, that's all right. You got to go out there. Both those teams need a quarterback. Mm-hmm. You have to go out there and pick the best quarterbacks available and hope that they can end up being the face of the franchise.
Right. If you're going to, for those franchises, especially because they're smaller markets, if you're going to swing and miss, at least do it with a guy that has the biggest potential. If you go after somebody else, kind of a no-name, you never hear from him again, you're really going to get hit hard on that. If Mariota or Winston don't come to anything, it's okay. That was the pick that you were supposed to make. It's going to put fans in the stadium. It's going to make them money. At least it's going to make them money, even if they don't pan out. I mean, you had to go that way, one, two. There was no, for all the hype and all the talk and everything, I think deep down everybody knew this is what's going to happen, one and two.
I think that the best player in the draft is probably going to end up being Amari Cooper.
Oh, and, yeah.
And, man, Oakland is killing it in this draft, especially with Cooper. That franchise is heading in the right direction.
You think so?
Yeah. Carr's going to be throwing touchdown passes to Amari Cooper for years to come. I think that they really are doing some good things there.
I'd have to disagree, not because of their moves. It's because it's Oakland. Franchises that continuously falter, I don't have any faith in. So, I mean, it seems like they get good picks, and they always have a high pick because they've been so terrible for so long. It just doesn't work out the way it's supposed to. So I absolutely believe Amari is the man. He's the guy. That's, if I had a pick of a wide receiver, that's a guy I think everybody would have taken. But in Oakland, oh man, I hope he just doesn't drown out there like a lot of players do.
You're right on that. They don't have a good locker room culture to bring guys along. So they can bring in all the talent in the world and it can flop. But I think that they can turn it around. And I think that they have the talent now. And that's such a big thing that they've been missing is the talent. Mm-hmm. You need to get guys in there who are capable of winning in order to foster that good mentality and those things build off of one another. And I think they're heading in that right direction. We'll see how it plays out
we'll
over
see.
The course of this season
we'll
and
see.
The next few.
The surprise pick for me was Todd Gurley to the Rams. I mean, the Rams now have Zach Stacy, they've got Trey Mason, and now Todd Gurley. Three stud running backs. I actually just read the other day that Stacy's asking for a trade. I mean, who wouldn't? He's literally third now, and he was over a 1,000-yard rusher before. I mean, he's totally a good back. I know Jeff Fisher wants to run the ball more, and that's a good plan. They got rid of Bradford. They brought in Foles. They don't want to put all their money in Foles. They want to run the ball, but I don't feel like that's going to pan out. They had other issues they could have addressed.
I agree with you, too. Todd Gurley, I think, can be an absolute stud. He is the best back in the draft. Normally, I'm critical of teams picking running backs in the first round, and especially in the top 10.
Most people are.
And he did go number 10, but I would totally support that pick if the guy wasn't coming off of an ACL tear.
Very
he's
true.
Coming on, he's not even healthy now. He might not be ready for week one. He might not ever be the same. You never know when guys come back from torn ACLs.
After Adrian Peterson came back and had basically his best year ever, I think everybody just is kind of devaluing the severity of an ACL tear. I mean, it's probably the worst kind of injury you can have that a running back, specifically a running back, could have. And the comeback, it's tough, man.
Between that and a ruptured Achilles, either of those are just brutal.
Yeah, that's just about the worst.
I worry about that pick for them. I like the Chargers going and getting Melvin Gordon, trading up for him.
You like Melvin over Gurley?
Yes, I think Gurley was the better college back and probably had the potential to be the better pro back. But just with the ACL tear, you got to go with Melvin Gordon first. Plus, they need a running back more than the Rams need a running back.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it made a lot more sense. They definitely need a running game out there. Wisconsin running backs are usually pretty good. They're a good pick, except, I mean, they're great in college. Monty Ball has not panned out the way people thought he was supposed to. But, you know, he's still young, so he could. Getting a stud running back from Wisconsin is not a bad idea. Something I know we disagree on is the Kevin White pick by the Chicago Bears. Losing Brandon Marshall, still having Alshon Jeffrey, and putting him, you know, on the other side of Kevin White, I think it's going to be real good. I think it's going to really be scary for defenses. We've got John Fox now, which is a surprising pick because Fox is a total defense guy. Maybe we can outscore some teams. That's the new Bears motto, and I kind of agree with that.
Now, I do agree that Kevin White is going to make the Bears better. I just don't like picking him number 7 overall. And I know that's where he was on a lot of boards. I personally don't think he's a first-round talent. He's fast, but he's not the kind of guy like Alshon Jeffrey or Brandon Marshall who's going to out-muscle you for a catch.
This is true. This is true.
So I think that they could have gotten someone who would have done 90% of what he brings you later in the draft. Just get a burner who's not as big and doesn't have as big of a college profile.
He's still pretty raw for an early pick. You're taking a gamble, but I think it's the right way to go. It's the new strategy out in Chicago is try to outscore him. As long as Jay Cutler can do something, I think it'll work out for us.
I do like the idea of getting a fast guy to take the top off defense. One more thing before we move on from Kevin White is I wanted to point out that the Scout site app that we were talking to a friend of the show, Todd Stussy, last week, shows a bunch of comparisons for Kevin White. The closest comparisons to him are Blair White, Shaq Evans, Dominic Hickson, Greg Ellingson, and Royce Pollard. And that's just
I don't think anybody recognizes any of those names besides Hickson, maybe. I mean, you're not going to hear those much often.
The guys that he compares to statistically the closest have not done well in the pros, and that worries me a lot.
The draft was here in Chicago. That's the guy the fans wanted to see, and, you know, you got to pick him. And the last thing, the one thing that kind of worried me that I think John Gruden picked out was that Kevin White lines up 90% of the time on the right side. The numbers were insane. It's like 900 sometimes that he's lined up on the right side and like 30 that he's lined up on the left. So you got to have some versatility in the NFL. I mean, they'll target you every time, the defense, and it'll be easy to take you out of your game if you can't be versatile. A guy like Revis or Sherman is easily going to take you out if they know exactly what you're going to do, what side you're going to be on. There's no surprises. So one thing to consider, I guess, a negative on my end.
We're going to take a break, but when we come back, we got the Tweet Zone coming right up.
Hey guys, it's Steve here. I know a lot of you have been wanting to try out DraftKings.com. Now is the perfect chance to do that. Fantasy sports fans are winning huge cash prizes every day at DraftKings.com, America's favorite place to play daily fantasy sports. Daily fantasy means no season-long commitments. You just play whenever you want, pick your sport, draft your team. It's like a new season every time you play, so you're never stuck with the same players. Last year, $300 million were won at DraftKings.com, and you could be the next to win big. Go to DraftKings.com now and enter promo code HAZARD to play for free. That's HAZARD for free entry now at DraftKings.com.
Welcome back to Sports Appeal. You're back with Matt and Sergio, and we're going to read your tweets right here on the Tweet Zone with Johnny Five.
Tweet Zone. Hit the tweets.
Alrighty, let's get into it. This is the Tweet Zone. We've got an initial tweet from us at the Sports Appeal saying, "Seems like the Jets are getting off easy with a $100,000 fine." To which another friend of the show from the Sports Mecca, find folks over there at thesportsmecca.com, D. Cunningham CLE responds, "Curious as to how they get punished before the Patriots for Deflategate."
So first of all, in case anybody's not clear on the Jets fine, they're getting fined for tampering for their owner saying that he'd like to bring back Darrelle Revis back in December, mid-season. Well, I don't really think that that's too light of a fine. It really doesn't seem like that big of a deal to me.
It doesn't. And the Patriots thing is right on point. The Patriots are like that son of the NFL that you just love. They're the golden boy. They can't do anything wrong. And for all the things they've done, they don't get fined. The Jets, they make a comment, and yes, it went through. They got Revis back, but what is the point of what's $100,000 going to do to the Jets at all? It's more what it shows the difference between the fact that they'll fine the Jets, they won't touch the Patriots, as to what's really going on in the NFL.
I mean, we'll see. The Patriots punishment hasn't been announced yet, but that is weird that they haven't even announced the punishment yet. It seems like they're trying to wait until this goes away.
Exactly.
When they do a really minor penalty, no one like cares anymore.
Yeah,
that's... I mean, this was 5 months ago now. Four months
Nobody's
ago.
Nobody's even thinking about it anymore. It's they're just trying to hope it just blows over.
It's pretty sad. Well, like, how much more do you need to figure out? How much more can you figure out
from investigation? How much more evidence can you pull?
Either we know that they did inflate the footballs or they didn't. Just get this over with.
He's stupid, yeah.
All right. We tweeted, 4 out of the top 5 teams in runs scored are in the AL East. To which GHam614 replied, "It is the toughest division in the MLB, in my opinion."
It's true. It's not a surprising stat, but it just goes to show how good the AL East is and always has been, especially because now Yankees are actually doing pretty good this year. A-Rod's back, and so he's surprisingly well this year. But, I mean, you have the Yankees, you have Boston. Tampa Bay has been great the last few years. It's a really hard division, and that's what they do. They score runs. They're
Absolutely.
Not about defense. They're not about small ball. They're all about home runs, and they're all about just crushing you in the scoreboard.
Now, as far as how you determine what makes a team or a division the best, I look more to run differential than to actually runs scored. But the AL East is way out ahead in terms of run differential.
Not even close, I bet. Yeah, I haven't looked at the number, but I'm sure it's not even close.
It's not. Now, I think the second best division has got to be the NL Central, where 3 of the teams are significantly like into double digits plus in run differential. Then you got the Reds at -7, and then you've got the Brewers just bringing everyone down at -48 run differential. That is horrible.
And in comparison to the Cardinals, who I don't know what their differential is,
+38,
which is ridiculous. I mean, people just don't score runs on the Cardinals. I mean, I think it's an average of, not even 2 runs that is scored. Again, their pitching is that good. Unfortunately, the whole Wainwright thing happened, and we'll touch on that in a second. But, by far, AL's going to be the best in scoring runs. That's no surprise. NL is surprisingly good this year because the Cubs are good. I mean, that was expected, but they're usually not as good as they have been, which is a nice surprise for Chicago guys. Makes perfect sense. It's very tough over there. I'm actually more surprised by the Yankees play than the Cubs play. They're surprisingly good this year.
The Yankees are 14-9 right now. Steve and I did not expect them to be that good. We thought they were going to be around .500 this year.
Exactly.
With a chance of taking the division, but certainly an underdog for it. But no, it looks like they're, as of right now, they're doing great in terms of the division standings.
Absolutely. Even Toronto, was expected, I think, to do a little bit better. But being at the bottom of that division, 11-13, that division's insane.
That's going to be a bloodbath. Like, the Toronto Blue Jays are 3.5 games back, and they're at the bottom of the division.
That's crazy.
So it's going to be a fight till the end, I'm guessing.
And speaking of moving to the end, we've got our last tweet right here from friend of the show, Matt Yost, under Twitter handle, @TheRealYost, saying, "What do you guys think about the recent incidents with Adam Wainwright and Max Scherzer? Should the NL adopt the designated hitter?"
This is the debate that happens every year. I feel like it keeps being talked about and eventually it's going to happen. But I cannot disagree more with people that think we should have a DH in the NL. I'll even go as far to say as the AL should go back to not having a DH at all. If I'm watching sports, in any sport it is, every player has to do everything. I mean, yes, there's positions, but if you're going to pitch them bat, it's a part of the game. And people that want to slow or speed up the game because they don't want to watch a 4-hour game, whatever, I get that. I don't have a problem with it. But if you want to speed it up, you're never going to speed it up with a DH. Yes, it's kind of an automatic out with pitchers. If you don't want it to be, then teach your pitchers how to hit. It makes no sense to devaluate the game with just throwing in another hitter and just for pure run purposes. You just want to see more scores. It's ridiculous.
You're wrong for 2 reasons. Number one, it really is an issue with top pitchers getting hurt, not even pitching. Like, if guys are going to get hurt pitching, fine. But getting hurt in the batter's box, it seems so disappointing when some of these top players get hurt doing something that they're not even really there to do. And then the other reason is runs. I know you were saying you think that that's a cheap way to go about it, but look, baseball is at historic lows in terms of offense. The league batting average is .250. That's terrible. I want to see what they can do to bring that up. And one of those things that they could do is the designated hitter.
The reason the run production is so low is because pitching has basically never been better in the sense of across the league. Maybe not individual pitchers, but even Clayton Kershaw, one of the best of all time. it's the pitching, not the lack of a DH in the NL that's causing the runs to not be there.
One of the ways you can combat that is bringing up the overall quality of the hitting.
I don't think that the idea is to manipulate what's going on in the field by changing the rules. You don't just bring up runs by adding a position in there that wasn't there before.
It's already happened,
I don't like it.
It's been done. The ALs had the designated hitter for how long now? We should have everybody on the same page. The DH is never going away. It's time to bring everybody into the fold.
If you're going to be a pitcher and you're going to crush hitters with your pitching, you should have to go up there and prove yourself too. I don't like that. It's this baby Bush League way of trying to get runs and trying to get more viewers. And it's totally counteracting what they're trying to do with speeding up games. It just makes no sense. I want to see people actually get in there. Get your hands dirty. Let's see what you can do. And if not, put in a pinch hitter and go take the bench. Like, it's not, it's that easy for me. I don't like this baby BS stuff where you get out of a DH because I'm afraid of getting hurt. Injuries are part of the game. They're part of every game. And if you get injured, tough. I mean, I'm sorry. The guy, Wainwright, got injured with running out of the box? That's your own fault. If you can't run, you're a grown man, you're an athlete. That's absurd. It's not like they're getting pounded by fastballs. Like, they're not getting hit by pitches. They run out of the box and get hurt, then just jog out and get an out if you want to. It's not, we shouldn't have to suffer because of that. The tradition shouldn't have to suffer because of that.
I will say on one hand that I do love seeing a pitcher that can hit.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
Travis Wood. Hitting a grand slam against the White Sox a few years ago. I was there. It was awesome. So there is that in favor of it. I still think that it's just better for the game to get everybody on the same page in terms of both leagues with the rules and also to bring up the offense in both leagues.
I mean, you might as well just have a designated runner every time David Ortiz comes up to bat or Miguel Cabrera. Just set him next to home plate, let him hit, and that guy will take off. That's what this is coming to.
Let's take a break, but when we come back, we're going to have some NBA playoffs recap and sports magic.
Fantasy sports fans are winning huge cash prizes every day at DraftKings.com. Last year, $300 million were won, and you could be the next to win big. Go to DraftKings.com now and enter promo code HAZARD to play for free. That's HAZARD for free entry now at DraftKings.com.
Welcome back to Sports Appeal. You're back here with Serge and Matt. You can find us on podbean.com, iTunes as well. Make sure to check us out and rate us on iTunes. Tweet us at The Sports Appeal.
Let's take in the NBA because we got a lot going on right there. Three of the four matchups in the next round are in place as of recording this, and the last one will be determined in Game 7 of the Clippers versus the Spurs tonight. Should be a good game.
Oh, yeah.
And we've got Golden State Warriors versus the Memphis Grizzlies. Whoever wins tonight versus the Houston Rockets, the Atlanta Hawks versus the Washington Wizards, and Chicago Bulls versus the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, obviously, I'm biased, but that to me is the most compelling matchup of the second round.
I totally agree. I think San Antonio's going to take it, even though they're in L.A. San Antonio's a veteran team. Overall, I mean, Popovich being there, I think they're going to be able to pull it out. L.A.'s been playing well. They just seem a little gun-shy. You know, Blake Griffin doesn't seem at times that he really wants the ball. He keeps passing back to Chris Paul. DeAndre Jordan just can't hit a free throw for the life of him, and the Spurs are taking full advantage of that. Don't really care what anybody says. So I think they'll get out-coached and out-played.
I agree. And then another interesting stat, you were saying they're on the road for this. You know, the road team has won four of the six games in this series.
I didn't even realize that.
Yeah, it could end up being 5 of 7 if they do. If the Spurs do end up winning tonight.
That is crazy, yeah. The Bulls-Cavs games, when they come up, everybody seems like they've all jumped on the Bulls bandwagon ever since this last game when we made it to the next round. I think the Bulls can win it. I really think they can take it. They're without Kevin Love for the entire series, and J.R. Smith suspended for the first two games. If we can take one of those two games in Cleveland, I mean, we can take them both, but if we can take one of the two, we bring home court back to Chicago, I think they'll win the rest of the series.
Yeah, especially if they win one of the first two. I honestly, unfortunately, think the Cavs are going to end up winning this. I think the Cavs win in 7, but
sure.
I could definitely see the Bulls pulling this out too. If they play like they did in that game 6 against the Bucks, then the Bulls are easily winning this.
They beat anybody in that, you know.
That was unreal, and we'll talk about that a little bit in Sports Madness. The Atlanta-Washington series is going to be really interesting. I think Washington wins.
Oh, yeah. Washington's going to win that. I mean, Atlanta put up a good fight, but the fact that they had so much trouble with Brooklyn, I know it was only 4-2, but Brooklyn gave them a challenge, and Brooklyn's just an awful team. They might have some talent, but they're just awful, in my opinion. Atlanta, you know, they had a great record. They played well with what they had, but in the playoffs, it's a whole another game. It's best of seven. You know, the best team is going to shine, and you're going to see John Wall take over, and Nene just shut him down.
Golden State, Memphis. I was on Memphis, the Memphis bandwagon coming into this, but Golden State, I think, is just going to – they have too much scoring. They're not your prototypical team that's built for playoff success, but they've kind of won me over. I think that they just have so much going on.
I'm totally on the Golden State bandwagon. They're going to run them over. I think Steph Curry is starting to show how he is the best player this year. He's the MVP. He will lead them to the finals, and I think they're going to win the finals. I think everybody's thinking that now. But from the start, I mean, he's looked so good. The teams look so good. They're well coached by Steve Kerr. It's going to be a good series, but they're going to wipe the floor with the Grizzlies, I bet.
I think it'll go six games, but it should be a good series. Sergio, are you ready for sports madness?
Oh, fuck yeah.
Sports madness.
All right, first story we got in sports madness. My guy, Dan Ugla. He hit two triples in two games at Turner Field as a member of the Nationals, which equals the same amount he had during his 4 years there playing for the Braves.
To say that he underperformed for the Braves, I think, would be an understatement. Ugla was supposed to be this incredible hitter of all time, and it just to only hit two triples, that's embarrassing. I know triples are way more rare than home runs, but that's kind of an embarrassing stat. And now he's on the Nationals, and he's just cracking them out like it's nothing. I mean that's absurd.
He's had a pretty bad season this year, too. Turned it on for that series.
That's true.
He had the game-winning home run in one of those games, too, if I recall correctly.
It goes to show. You know, you play harder against teams who you were at against, so good for him. You know, my favorite story here, the Bulls shutting down the Milwaukee Bucks, moving on to the second round by a 54-point margin. It looks like a typo. Like, you think you're looking at something else. If you change a channel for 2 minutes, you come back, they're up by 50. You think something's wrong with your TV.
Yeah, especially in a playoff game where you expect. And they even lost two games to the Bucks.
Right.
And they come out and just put that drubbing on them. I'm glad you brought this up. First of all, it was the largest series clinching victory margin in NBA playoff history.
I'm sure that was easily the largest.
Oh, yeah. And then this one's my favorite. If you were to give the Bucks an extra point for every shot they made, including free throws, so 3 points worth 4, 2 points worth 3, and free throws worth 2, they'd still lose by 17. Still lose by double digits.
You couldn't give them the game. Like, you couldn't hand it to them. And my guy Mike Dunleavy putting in work. He's just a thug out there. They underestimate him, but he made everybody lose their composure. That's all it's all about in the playoffs is your composure.
You gotta keep our composure!
He totally did an awesome job at just getting under their skin and showing them, you know, who the veteran, who the better team was. So yep. That's my props out to Mike Dunleavy.
One last stat from this game before we move on. All five starters and Taj Gibson outscored the highest scoring Buck.
They said that nobody scored in double digits from the Bucks. First time in NBA playoffs history that a team has not had one player hit 10 points. Not one guy could score five baskets, get fouled a couple times. Absurd. Yeah. Absurd.
Absolute whooping in every facet of the game. And our next story in sports madness, Christian rapper KB brought Bubba Watson on to rap a verse in his new song, I'ma Just Do It.
Bubba Watts on the mic now. Can I go for spit a rhyme? Not a gangster rapper, but my caddy got a nine.
I just heard about this, and listening to the track, at first I'm like, what is going on here? But it's total Bubba Watson. If you see what he's like around in his personal life, like, he's just a goof. He likes to just mess around. Bubba Watson, two-time Masters champ, rapping, Christian rap. He actually mentioned that he won the Masters two times. I can't even stop thinking about it because I can't stop laughing. Come on. How do you imagine Tiger Woods rapping? Not the thing I would ever hear.
Especially Bubba.
You know, the last story that we got to mention, something everybody should check out. Baltimore Orioles played the first game in MLB history to not have a single paying fan in the stands. I mean, not a one. You got to check out the images. It's the craziest thing. They're playing baseball to nobody. Empty seats all the way across.
Yep, they were playing the White Sox, and you would think that would give the away team at least sort of an advantage or somewhat take away the home field advantage because you don't have the crowd cheering for the home team all the time. But no, the White Sox got schooled.
They got crushed.
I want to say it was 8-2.
Yeah, that was exactly right. And
bad.
There was home runs and everything, but how do you play a game like that, being a professional athlete, with just no sound? Like, where's your motivation coming from? But it's weird, man.
The TV announcers had some fun with it, too.
Yeah.
There was one bit where they called a couple plays like they were calling golf.
The appropriate way to broadcast. So with Adam Jones coming up here in the seventh inning, Jones' approach to the plate with Carroll deliver. Jones will whack the son of a gun to center field. That's very deep. It's deep, and it's off the base of the wall. He will head to second base. Adam Jones has a double, and that green jacket is well within reach, Jim.
It was great.
The images are something you got to catch. Look them up online. It's pretty stunning.
That about does it for us at Sports Appeal. Sergio, I want to thank you again for coming in and filling in for Steve.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Anytime you guys, you know, want me on, I'd be more than happy.
Playing us out is going to be Full Service with Greetings from Beyond.
Audio.